All right, welcome back, everybody. It has been over a year. In fact, I think, John and I'm here with my buddy John Clayton, and John and I did a podcast together over a year ago, and it went really well, and we're going to have our own series. We said that a year ago, but we still are. We've been trying to fine-tune it, but I really wanted to have start off the 2016 year with John, and he told a story on the last time he was on the podcast talking about the entertainment business and his pursuits. And though we are several years apart in age, we seem to have had the same struggles and I don't know what we say, bumping into walls, trying to make our way in. So everybody that's fans of this show, they know my story. But John kind of had some similar stories. So John, where are you from? If people can't tell, and tell me about you coming to Hollywood to pursue that dream.
Well, as hopefully as obvious, I'm originally from London, England, and I've been in this great country since 1957. And I've always thought that America, and I still believe it, America really is the land of opportunity, and there's so many wonderful things here. And I was working in New York, and I worked for a PR firm there. And I was really fortunate that when I came to New York, I worked for a company that, would you believe it, handled public relations for, and I wonder how many people listening know the names of, Chubby Checker, the Twist King. We also had two brothers called the Everly Brothers. And we also had a movie star called Bobby Rydell. And then we had someone that I'm sure most of you have heard of called Clint Eastwood. And I love New York because it was, I don't know, sort of like London, although anyone who's lived and worked in New York knows that in the summer, New York is like Africa, and in the winter, New York is like the North Pole. So I decided at one point in my life to leave the big city and venture west to California. And what's that phrase, seek my fame and fortune?
Right. I hear you. So let me ask you, when you came to California, did you have a plan? One thing I've always talked about on this podcast is have a plan, and I did not.
Larry, that's a great question, because when I look back at my life, and what is that cliche phrase, old too soon, too late, smart. I think as you get older, and I hope as you get older, you learn a lot of things, and I just wish that I had known then what I know now. And to answer your question, no, I didn't have a plan. I was just, like so many people, in love with Hollywood and the romance and the magic, and I thought it would be, I don't know, I thought, would it be a breeze to come out here and do what I want to do? But no, I think it is absolutely crucial and critical when you pursue anything in life, you have to have a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 plan. Otherwise, you're completely lost. And I wish, Larry, more than you know, that I had a plan.
Well, you know, it's oftentimes when you hear interviews with famous celebrities, they always say, when they get asked, how did you get into the business? And it's always some weird, I don't want to say always. Of course, there's many, 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 many actors that have studied, they pursued it. I'm not saying this is how, but there's a lot of those celebrities that they were carpenters first. They, like Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And they had other trades that they were doing, and they kind of pursued it lightly. Now, I don't know about Harrison Ford, but I mean, like, you know, that kind of a, they fell into it, which always gets me angry, because I'm like,
gets you angry?
Yeah, because when I hear those stories of someone, well, here's the famous one. Well, my buddy was going to an open audition, and he wanted me to go with him to keep him company.
Yeah.
So the person that was keeping him company is the one who got the job.
Yeah.
With no intent on being in showbiz, you know.
I'm with you. The other side to that, Larry, is the number of people who, through whatever providence, joined Actors Studio in New York,
right.
Lee Strasberg, and then, you know, I can't think of the names of some of the people there, but just like you said, they decided to go to Hollywood, and then the guy at Actors Studio in New York said, hey, why don't you look up so-and-so? So connections play a big part. But yeah, your story about going to an audition with someone is absolute hit homes.
Right.
It really hits home with me. And you say how unfair life is.
Right. Well, when you came to L.A., what was the first thing you said, okay, did you want to be an actor? Was it something that, like, you've always wanted to be an actor? Or was it like, I'm just going to see if I can do it?
Again, Larry, that's a great question. I think there was, I don't think I know, there was a tremendous sense of uncertainty. Am I really as good as I think I am? What if I'm not as good as well as I am? And I remember going to a couple of auditions and reading with a friend of mine. And when I left there, I said, oh, John, you were absolutely awful. But then, here's an interesting thing. Fast forward many years when I was on LA radio, and I would listen to myself on the radio, which is a really weird thing. If you're driving along in a car and you hear yourself, I'd say to myself, oh, that's so awful. And then I'd get emails from people, listeners, and saying, oh, I just love listening to your voice. I like your accent. So it's really, maybe the audition I did when I came here was terrific. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wasn't. So again, Larry, I wish more than anything that I'd had a plan. And I wish, and here's the key thing, I wish that I was as dedicated and as passionate about becoming a well-known actor as I was when I decided to get on American radio. If you have that passion and if you have that drive, yes, you can make it. And as a thought before I forget it, talking about coming out here, I remember watching an interview with Jack Nicholson, and I wonder how many people listening know Jack Nicholson's name. He was interviewed by a TV host called Dick Cavett, and Dick Cavett said to him, when did you want to be an actor? And he said, I wanted to be a movie star when I was 5. Larry, if you know at 5 what you want to be, wow, that is so important. So whoever is listening, you got to decide what you want to do, and you got to pursue it with an absolute passion.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and what's been told to me, which is it's a compliment, but at the same time, a good friend of mine who I've done music with said, you know what your problem is? And I go, what's that? He goes, you're great at a lot of things, but you need to be amazing at one. And that was because he watched how I would go from pursuing music to pursuing acting to pursuing writing to pursuing sound editing to pursuing voiceover work. And it's like this, it's like, yeah, you're good at all of those things, but good isn't enough. You have to find one of those. And like you just said, be passionate about it and be focused and just keep doing that and work hard at that craft so that you are not just great, you know, you're the top.
You know, in the many conversations you and I have had, not necessarily as a podcast, but just as friends, I've identified with you so many, many times. And again, what you just said typifies me 1,000%, because I knew I was a good writer. I knew that I was good at public relations. I knew I was a good public relations executive. I thought I was a good actor. I knew I could do voiceovers, and I had all these different things. And I thought, gosh, now shall I do this? Shall I do the other? And you just cannot do that. If you become famous as an actor, then you can go in and do photography and you can get your photograph sold because, oh, look, my photo, this is a photograph by Harrison Ford or this, I mean, so you can, but yes. And I wonder how many people listening are like what we're talking about right now. They're thinking, gosh, I can do this. I mean, how important is it, do you think, to make an absolute commitment to doing one thing?
I think it's, you know, I wish I could go back and say, I'm going to do this one thing, because I really do believe that, and I'm sure you do with your career as well, focusing on the one thing and not getting sidetracked. you know. Life, you know, there's all kinds of things that come in life, you know, whether it's different jobs that you need to keep working at just to pay the bills, it's places you live. Are you far away from being able to practice your trade distance-wise, you know? Having a family and just all these different things come and go and kind of make it. But still, if it's still the one thing you want to do more than anything, I really think that you could find a way. I think for me, I made a lot of excuses to quit.
Amen.
Something hits me in the head. I'm like, that's fine. You know what I mean? Instead of getting back up and going, no, I'm gonna keep coming at you till you let me in. I just don't think I ever had that drive. I had the drive to pursue it, and I don't think I was strong enough to handle the rejection. I don't mean emotionally handle the rejection. It's just like if enough people say no, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go do this now instead of just keep at it. So
you raised another interesting point, Larry. And when I made up my mind to get on American radio here in Los Angeles, I had a little sign in front of my telephone on the wall, and it said, how much do you want to get on LA radio? So anytime I'd pick up the phone to call someone, and I thought, oh, I couldn't call so-and-so because they're going to say no to me, I'd look at this sign and I'd say to myself, yes, I want to get on LA radio more than anything.
Right.
And I made up my mind I was never, ever going to understand the meaning of the word no. Mm-hmm. And what you just said there is so true of, I'm sure, of a lot of people who are listening. They get the word no, and they say, okay, it's not for me. But it boils down to, how much do you want what you say you do?
Mm-hmm.
But the big break came for me, and I've thought about this, Larry, 10 million times, when I said to myself, wait a minute, I did PR for Clint Eastwood back in New York, and he told me that when I came to California, I could look him up. I'm going to call him and see if I can come out and see him. I did that, and he said, sure, John, I'm working on a show called Rawhide on television. Come out to the studio, and we'll get together. So I go out there full of my Hollywood dreams, and I go into the studio, and here he is sitting in this Western sitting on the soundstage, and I was talking to him, and he was talking to me. And Larry, I kept waiting for him to say to me, John, how can I help you? Ah, what a crazy dumb thing. I mean, I should have said to him, hey, Clint, you know, do you think you could possibly introduce me to your agent? Could you get me a part in one of your movies? But I was so tongue-tied, which is unusual looking back at my life, I was so tongue-tied and so afraid that he might say no, that I never asked him. And Larry, I think you may have had similar experiences in your life with famous people, but if I had asked him, it would have changed my life.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the other side. Had I done that, I might never have met the lady that I did meet. I might never have got on LA radio. I mean, you always tend to look at the bright, wonderful side.
Right.
So, I mean, have you ever had...
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I've told this story at great length on the podcast. Your son-in-law, Mike, was actually a guest on the show when I was telling this story. But, you know, real briefly, I had an opportunity to audition for Jim Henson.
Really?
When I was in college.
The Muppet guy.
Because I had one of those many things I wanted to do was be a puppeteer. And I was good at it, but I wasn't trained. I just worked hard at it, and I really liked it. But it was one of those things where, oh, I'll try this, I'll try that. And I had got the nerve to call Jim Henson's company in New York, Henson Associates, and I just asked them, I want to be a puppeteer. I want to work for the Muppets. What do I got to do? So this guy that was on the phone was really, you know, total New York guy, had a strong accent. He didn't sound like he would be a guy working at Henson, but he goes, oh, so you want to be a puppeteer, huh? Well, can you do any voices? Let me hear you do some voices. And I was like, I'm on the phone just going, well, what do you want me to do? He goes, well, can you do Kermit the Frog? So I did Kermit the Frog. And he was like, huh, can you do Miss Piggy? And I did Miss Piggy. And he goes, can you do Gonzo? So I was like going through the Muppets that I that I could do their voices.
Had you practiced that before?
I just did them, just like any other goofy person. You just do voices. I've always kind of done that, and I like to imitate people. And so he said, okay, that sounds good. So what you're going to want to do is you're going to, and I'll never forget this person's name because it's such a classic showbiz name. He goes, you're going to want to send a tape, because this is many years ago.
Back in the day.
You want to send a tape to Mira Velimirovic. Isn't that a great name? Mira Velimirovic. And so I went, and at the time, I was just getting ready to graduate college, and I was taking a composition of electronic music class. And I had access to a recording studio. And so I went in there at night. First, I wrote, I came up with about 15 characters, just voices. I did a bunch of Muppet voices, and then I did a bunch of homemade voices with, and I wrote out this a little script so I wouldn't, you know, mess it up. I would just do it nice and clean. And I went in there and recorded those and then sent them off to Jim Henson. Okay. You know, about literally like 3 weeks later, I get a phone call, and it's Mira Velimirovic. And she says, we just got your voice tape, and we want to say it's quite good. We were very impressed. But we don't know what you want to do. Do you want to be a puppeteer, or do you want to be do cartoon work? And at that time, the show The Muppet Babies was on a Saturday morning cartoon, and that was probably what they were referring to. And I was all I had was, in my eyes, was I want to be a puppeteer. So I said, well, I want to be a puppeteer. And they said, okay, well, you need to send us a videotape of three different puppets, three different characters. So I wrangled some puppets together. I actually had a friend that was a puppeteer, and she gave me a custom puppet to use, which was a beautiful elderly man with ostrich feather hair. And I went to the like toy store and got a couple other puppets that just were kind of goofy looking. So I recorded this videotape with a buddy of mine that was in the theater department with me, but he was also a filmmaker, film student. So he put it all together, and we cut it, and I sent it to them. And at the time, it took about a month, and they sent me a letter. Now, I didn't get a phone call this time. I got a letter. Big difference than a phone call. So the letter said, hey, good job. And they totally critiqued it, which I really appreciate. They went down, they were talking about, you know, you're at this one part where your character said this line, your eye level contact was really good, but then it shifted. And I mean, they tore it apart. And I wish, I don't know, I would never throw that letter out, but I don't know, I've lost it. I would never have thrown it out. It must have
The fact is, it showed that they were interested.
Yeah. So here's the big screaming part, like you had with Clint Eastwood. Well, I got the letter and I said, all right, guess they don't like me. Because they said, why don't you go join some puppet guilds, join some puppet troops, and then come back to us. And I was like, eh, I'm done, moving on. Now, my wife now, when I should never have told her this story, because she literally was livid. She goes, why didn't you call them back and say, what about the voiceover work? And I was like, because I had no guidance. I had nobody. I was just kind of alone, in the sense of like nobody kind of mentoring me. And that's it. I dropped the ball. You know, and that to this day, it just kills me, you know. And so I feel your pain. Now, after the going back to the Clint Eastwood, after that time with Clint Eastwood, did you just walk away from pursuing acting, or were there other stories where you tried and...
I said to myself, okay, I've got to see if I am as good as I think I am.
Right.
And I read in the trade papers about an audition for a play, a famous English play, whose the name of which I have momentarily forgotten. And some friends of mine said to me, you should really go for the lead. And when I read the play, there was also a part, a much smaller part, of a British police inspector. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, that is a much more interesting part. It's got a lot more meat to it. So I'm going to go and read for that part. And all my friends said to me, you're crazy, you're not going for the lead. The other thing is that, to be quite honest, if I'd gone for the lead, I don't want to learn all that stuff. I mean, the lead was on the stage, you know, every second. Long story short, I studied absolutely tooth and nail. I studied British detectives on and on and on. And when I did the play, my first appearance on the play, I went and, you know, I confronted these people in the play. And when I left the stage, the audience erupted in hand clapping and cheers. So I thought, wow, maybe I am, you know, as good as I thought. Cut to the chase. Next, the following week, a story appeared in the Hollywood Reporter that dissected the whole play, person for person, and dissed everybody. And the last line of the review said, quote, John Clayton was very good as a police inspector. Larry, just like you in that story you just related, I said, wow, that's incredible. But I did absolutely nothing about it.
Huh. And that was it? And you were done? And then you went on to you know, that's a whole other show, the radio biz that we've talked about on the other podcast. Is that essentially what happened then? You just cut it out and then, all right, I'm going to do something else.
About a month later, and what a funny thing time is, about a month later, I got a call from a medium-sized but very good Hollywood talent agency, and a friend of mine had forwarded them the review from the Hollywood Reporter, had praised me to the skies, and he basically told them, you need to see John Clayton. Larry, I shudder to tell you this story, so I went in and met them, and I talked to this guy, and there was a woman and a guy there, and I said to them, I'm cringing saying this story to you. I said to them, I'm so tired of people telling me how good I am, and I'm not getting anywhere. Ah, it's driving me crazy. Had I gone in there very humbly and said, you know, I really appreciate you talking to me. What can I do so we can work together? Yada, yada, yada. Again, my whole life would have been changed. But when you're a gung-ho young Hollywood actor, you don't think about the ramifications of what should happen and what shouldn't happen. And that's another thing that I screwed up. And I've been sick about that for years.
Well, I think between the two of us, two peas in a pod, right? And it's also funny how things don't change, do they?
No.
You know, the separation in our generations, having just a couple, you know, two generations, it doesn't change, does it? The same, we're still humans. We still approach things kind of the same way, though technology changes, and of course the entertainment industry changes, the way that you pursue it obviously changes, but it all starts with what you said, the passion, being focused and doing one thing. So thanks for hanging out, John. Did you have fun?
I've enjoyed it tremendously. Real almost like seeing a psychiatrist.
Piece of cake. Well, everybody, thanks for listening to this may or not be the last podcast from How Not to Succeed in Showbiz for a while, because John and I are pursuing something new. And when we start our new podcast, we will let everybody know about it. But please subscribe on iTunes. Go back and listen to the old shows. Some of them are still pretty funny. Go listen to my first encounter with John. So thanks, John, for hanging out.
My pleasure. I loved it.
And we'll talk to you guys soon.